Lord, may we know your presence and hear your voice in our lives this morning. Amen. Well, folks, Christmas is coming. And with only 4 days to go, I wonder if the list of things that you have still to do is far longer than the amount of time you have left to do it in. But as we come to this final week of Advent, I think it's good for us to remember an old saying that the less we do for God, the more God can do for us. I think this is a reminder of what makes Christmas special, that what makes Christmas Christmas isn't what we do. It's not the size of our celebrations or the amount of presents under the tree that makes Christmas important, but rather it's what God has done for us. That's what makes Christmas truly significant. And although we might have grand plans because of our love for God, what truly matters is God's love for us. Not just for you and for me, but for all of humanity. Our readings today highlight the reality of God's love. This love is announced by an angel, and it is demonstrated by the words of a young girl. But I think to make sense of the Annunciation, we really need to step back 1,000 years to the time when David had just become the king of Israel. To put that into some perspective, Jesus was about as far in time from David as what we are from William the Conqueror. As you might recall, David started life as an outstanding shepherd. In fact, his family had left him standing out in the paddock when the prophet Samuel arrived looking for a new leader to replace King Saul. But David's journey towards kingship would not be straight or smooth, but he would end up doing great things, uniting the people of Israel, seizing Jerusalem, and bringing the Ark of the Covenant home. And so it's at this point that David has his great idea. After building for himself a fine palace of the best wood, David thinks, why not build one for God? Surely God would be happier with a new grand temple rather than that tatty old tent. As people, we do like to build fine things like houses and palaces and temples. After all, as Christians, we build churches and denominations and traditions. We build them to celebrate God and to thank God for all that he does for us. But when we do this, it's so easy, if unintentional, to expect that God will stay within the confines of the things that we build for him. We can inadvertently expect God to show us a little bit of gratitude for all that we do. After all, what we've built here is so much more impressive than what that guy did 50 years ago. It's easy to think that without our effort, without our theology, without our buildings, and without our influence, God's mission in the world will just go nowhere. I think it's this pattern that David's thinking fell into. It's this pattern that Nathan the prophet went along with, at least at first. But God had other plans. For what matters are not the big things that David does for God, so much as what God would do for David. God would say to Nathan in a dream that night, I've lived with my people in a tent since day one. When did I ever ask David for a mansion? He's looking at all of this back to front. It's not what David does for me that counts. It's what I'm doing for David. That's what's truly important. I've been with him since he was standing out in that paddock with the sheep. And I'm with him now. I'll make him a fine house, but not one made out of timber. I'm going to make him a family that will never wobble and a kingdom that will never be demolished, because my love for David is solid and firm. When we hear God's promise to David, we might ask, how is this possible? How could this be? After all, if you were to read on through Samuel and Kings, what you discover is that David's story has more twists and turns than a Barbara Cartwright novel. Not only that, there are more unsavory tenants in his house than any Trump Tower. Furthermore, the whole kingdom goes to rack and to ruin. So is this an empty promise? As Christians, we assume that God's is simply foreshadowing Jesus' arrival. After all, who else can make God's, can make David's house firm and secure? It's natural for us to take the next step and believe that we are doing God a favor, that God's work depends upon us, that we are the ones who put Christ back into Christmas. That if it's not for all our advertising and our songs and our decorations, well, no one would see God in this celebration. It's a reminder that what counts is not what we do for God, but what God has done for us. All of which brings us to the Annunciation. When God's plan to change the world is put into action, it does not go the way we would expect. We might expect that God would pass this responsibility onto someone really important. So it's a surprise when God's messenger appears to Mary. Because if truth be told, Mary is nobody special, at least in the eyes of the world. Mary wasn't from an important city like Rome. She lived in a one-cow town called Nazareth, which was perhaps a little more like Walgett than Warringah. She wasn't an important priest, an important person like a priest or a general. No, she was, in all likelihood, a girl who was 14 or 15 years old living with her parents. And even though her marriage had been arranged with Joseph's family, it hadn't been finalized by this point. What we see is not a picture of Mary's greatness, so much as a picture of the greatness of God's love working out through people who are of no particular importance. But as lowly as what Mary seems in the eyes of the world, God sees Mary differently. Greetings, favored one, is how the angel introduces himself. The Lord is with you. For as lowly as what Mary seems, she was so deeply beloved by God. This love, this favor, this grace was simply a gift. She'd done nothing to deserve or warrant this. What Gabriel said to Mary echoed what was said to David 1,000 years earlier, that she would have a son who would become great, who would receive David's throne, who would be God's son and reign forever. It's so easy for us to underestimate Mary, as men so often do. It's easy to dismiss love as being far less important than the business of making money or ruling from parliament. But God's plan to change the world does not begin with a tycoon or a prime minister or even a theologian. God entrusts the whole plan of world salvation to a soon-to-be teenaged mum who would conceive and bear a son. This Mary is no pushover who passively accepts this as her lot in life. But Mary is questioning and active and engaged throughout. She asks, how can this happen? But it's a question that's not born of doubt. Mary is certainly troubled by the sudden appearance of the angel, but she is not terrified or overwhelmed as her cousin's husband, Zechariah, was. After being told about Jesus and letting the responsibility of being God's guardian settle in for a moment, she is not filled with doubt as to her capacity to do this. And while Mary is not yet married to Joseph, she wonders, why would God choose her from all the millions of people able to do this? Mary's response shows strength and cast iron resolve. For while Zechariah, the priest, asks for proof, Mary, the girl, simply says, here I am as God's servant. Let it be me. What an amazing picture of God's love at work. God's love is never closed-minded or cold-hearted. Mary may not have had all the answers, but she was confident enough to trust that great things could happen from these ordinary circumstances. Because as Gabriel assured her, all of this would be God's doing, because nothing is impossible with God. Isn't this how love works? Love appears unexpectedly. It starts as something as small as an embryo, embedding itself within our life. It grows all by itself. It might look so fragile, so insignificant when it starts, but what matters is what it will become. Love always entrusts the impossible to the overlooked and to the unprepared. God changes the world not through the sophistry of theologians or the bank accounts of industry or the bombs of dictators. God changes the world through the lives of ordinary people who are prepared to let love grow through them. So Christmas is not a house for us to show off God, as though the wonder of salvation all depends upon us, but rather Christmas is a reminder of what God has done for us. God has brought us into his family, into his kingdom, into something that will never collapse and will certainly never be defeated. The promise given to David, which is realized at Christmas, is that God met us all while we were out standing in the paddock with the sheep. And God is the one who brings us into his future. Like David and Mary, we receive the gift of life, the gift of hope, which stretches far beyond our mortal bodies into something far greater than we could ever hope for or imagine. God's love is at work in this world. God announces it in ways that are so easily overlooked or ignored. God's work of love does not depend upon us. It unfolds through ordinary people. And isn't that just the most impossible work to ever imagine? The only question is, are we prepared to be a little less like David and a little more like Mary, to say, here I am, God's servant, let your love grow through me. Amen.